All this week, we've been exploring different aspects of our current healthcare system and the potential impact of the House Republicans' plan to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. Now, since it's Congress that's going to vote on these changes, today we thought we'd look at the insurance Congress itself gets and how do lawmakers pay for it. Many people believe they get free healthcare. They don't. Many others say they should have to buy plans through the Affordable Care Act. They already do. Dylan Scott is Washington correspondent for our partners at STAT, the health and medicine publication. He's with us now. Hi there, Dylan.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
All right. So first of all, a lot of people are confused for understandable reasons on how health insurance works for members of Congress. So set us straight. What is the situation for House and Senate members right now?
Sure. So broadly speaking, lawmakers are supposed to buy their insurance through the marketplaces that were set up under Obamacare. And that was part of a big fight dating back to when the law was being drafted before it was passed. But they're supposed to go on the marketplaces and buy insurance. And for the most part, the one sort of hitch, the way that they're different from normal people who are going on the marketplaces of buying coverage, is they are still receiving, by and large, the employer contribution that they would that they used to get from the federal government. So they're just treated in a way as normal employees whose employer pays a big chunk of their health insurance bill premiums, but they have to buy the insurance through the marketplaces.
I see. So that sort of presages what was going to be my next question. A lot of people think there's this petition on change.org right now, and more than 500,000 people have signed it saying that they believe that Congress should, quote, remove health care subsidies for members of Congress and their families. So is that that demand makes sense in the context of they're getting a chunk of the money of their health care costs from the federal government?
Right. So it's an interesting backstory, and this has popped up both when Obamacare was drafted and a couple times since it has passed. The way it was originally supposed to work, or so everybody thought, is that not only would lawmakers and their have to purchase health insurance through the Obamacare's marketplaces, but they would not get the employer contribution that they were currently, you know, getting from the federal government when they had normal federal government health insurance. And part of the reason was, and that was Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa's idea. And if anybody knows Chuck Grassley, he's very into this. It should be fair, and Congress should have to live with the consequences of their own legislation. But that was the original kind of baseline that everybody thought was going to happen when Obamacare passed. But what the Obama administration decided was that, no, even though the lawmakers do need to go on the marketplaces and buy their insurance that way, they can still receive the employer base, their employer contribution from the federal government to help to pay for it. And so that's the criticism that you've heard come up a few times since then, that yes, members of Congress have to go on the marketplaces and buy health insurance there, but they're able to do something that nobody else is able to do, which is use money from their employer to do it. And several times, some of the most conservative Republicans have said, no, we should nix that employer contribution for ourselves. But thus far, it hasn't happened. Although some lawmakers have voluntarily declined to take their federal government contribution. But obviously, you know, your average member of Congress is wealthier than your average American. And so they're probably better situated to handle a bigger insurance
premium. I was just going to say that we're not necessarily talking about many, if any, members of Congress who come from a background where they were earning the minimum wage before joining Congress. So, but do we know sort of which plans most of the members have chosen? Because, of course, you do have a choice on the exchanges.
That is a great question. I have not seen any detailed analysis of what kind of coverage lawmakers are buying. I don't think they're under necessarily any obligation to disclose. I know some of them have, especially the ones who have very kind of dramatically and publicly said that they're going to decline the employer contribution from the federal government, have also said that they're going to buy some of these higher deductible plans that normal people are often buying because they're cheaper, but then are frustrated because of the out-of-pocket costs that come with them. Point being, I don't know in a systematic way, but it'll be interesting to see, as insurance coverage changes under the new, if this new law is passed, to see what kind of, if lawmakers are again given more choice about what kind of insurance to have.
Okay, which, so let me just jump. Let me just jump in here, Dylan. Here, because this was where I wanted to go next. At a press conference yesterday, House Speaker Paul Ryan did comment on this because he was asked exactly what you were just raising, where he thinks members of Congress should get their insurance under the new plan if the Republican reform plan passes. And here's what Speaker Ryan said.
I haven't given thought to that. I don't know the answer. When you get rid of Obamacare, you don't have Obamacare. We have Obamacare. We wouldn't have Obamacare. I haven't given any thought to that.
So, Dylan, okay, so House Speaker Ryan says he hasn't given any thought to that. But say the bill passes. I mean, there still is a federal health insurance plan, right, that many other federal employees use.
That's right. And, yeah, I should say from the outset that it's just not clear, to Speaker Ryan's point, the man most well acquainted with this legislation. If he hasn't given it a lot of thought, then clearly we don't have a clear answer to what's going to happen. There are a few wrinkles, though, that are interesting. First of all, because of the complex procedural rules that Republicans have to use to pass this bill without any Democratic support, they're not able to repeal the provision in Obamacare that required them to buy insurance on the marketplaces in the first place. And so that requirement that was set up under the ACA is not being repealed. And so one would think in theory that lawmakers and their staffs would still be, you know, statutorily obligated to buy insurance through the marketplaces, which the law is not doing away with. On the other hand, there's two other things. Chuck Grassley, again, he is kind of a recurring character in this issue, has said that whatever we end up passing and whatever insurance market it creates, members of Congress and their staff should have to buy insurance through it. And so he's already clearly thought of this and is on this train, and that'll be something to watch, both because it's a politically potent point, and Chuck Grassley is, you know, chairman of a powerful Senate committee. You know, if he says something, we should probably pay attention to it. And the one other thing that I've seen brought up here in the last couple of days as this issue has started to percolate is if Republicans were to say, actually, you know, to create this new insurance market with that will just inevitably have a lot of uncertainty, and, you know, we've seen some of the projections about people losing coverage. If they were to say, while we're creating this new insurance system, we're going to allow ourselves to move back to the old, rather generous and quite good federal insurance that we used to have before Obamacare, that opens up a pretty easy line of attack from Democrats. Now, whether that's enough to really stop them, that's something we'll have to wait and see.
So given all this, where does the prospects for the House bill stand now? I mean, it did pass the House Budget Committee yesterday, and today President Trump said he's 100% behind it. I'm seeing a plan for a full House vote sometime in the second half of next week. What do you think its prospects are?
I try not to be a prognosticator, but I will say, you know, they're set to vote next Thursday. So clearly, House leadership is serious about keeping this thing moving. I don't think they want it to get bogged down by all the things that are already seeming to stand in its way. President Trump, as you said, had a meeting with a big conservative caucus inside the Republican conference today, and he seems to think that he has a big chunk of those people who had been skeptical of the plan on board. However, I saw the House Freedom Caucus from their official Twitter account, and that's a group of about 40 of the most conservative people in the House. Their caucus Twitter account tweeted out that they still oppose the House bill as it exists, despite some of these concessions that President Trump and House leadership are trying to give to get conservatives on board. And so if those guys are serious, those 40 members of the Freedom Caucus are dedicated to opposing this bill unless they get more of what they want, that's enough to start it right, to stop the bill right there. And then on the other hand, and this is the push-pull that leadership has been dealing with from the start, if they make even more concessions to try to get the Freedom Caucus on board, then you have the moderate side of the Republican conference, who is clearly already a little on edge about this plan, that might push them to feeling like they can't support it. So it's hard to say. It really is. is. It's a very thin margin of error that they're working with.
And we didn't even. And we did, I was just going to jump in here because we didn't even talk about the skittish senators on the other side of Congress.
Oh, yeah, and that's not even getting, right, that's not even getting to the Senate. Right. That's just getting it through the House.
Well, Dylan Scott is Washington correspondent for our partners at STAT. Dylan, thanks so much.
Thank you.